welcome to another edition of the fastest 40 minutes in podcasting. We have got a full house to, we're coming back after a 3-week absence here. We've got a full house to preview the big Oxford Regional for the NCAA baseball tournament this weekend. With me are the usual suspects, Seth and Ross. Say hi, boys.
Good evening,
boys.
And we have a couple special guests as well from Red Cup Rebellion, the SBN Ole Miss site. We've got Ben and Bob. Say hi.
Hi. What's going on?
So we've got a full house here. We're going to try to, you know, not ramble for half of the podcast and actually delegate a little bit. So we're going to try to make this an informative thing here where we go back and forth and tell Mississippi fans what they need to know about Missouri and vice versa. And I do want to also let everybody know that I am, in fact, drinking a drink from a red Solo cup right now, just as a sign of solidarity.
Fantastic.
So I guess with that, let's roll. We will start with, the Ole Miss guys here. I guess, Ben, maybe, do you want to tell us a little bit about kind of Ole Miss's recent history heading into this season?
Sure. Recent history, Ole Miss has had, you know, pretty good seasons ever since Mike Bianco has come into Oxford. Head coach Mike Bianco is coming to Oxford. Last year, I went to the Coral Gables Regional with Miami being the number one overall seed. So they're ousted from that, unfortunately, as I'm sure Missouri fans already know. But before that, had a couple super regionals, one against Arizona State. The year before that, Ole Miss hosted against Miami and lost both of those regionals, super regionals. And then going back way before that, then you have Texas that came into Oxford, and Ole Miss lost in the super regional there. But kind of has been an escaping – Omaha has kind of been one of those escaping things from the team. Have had really good teams, but just haven't really been able to knock out the regional and the super regional. This year's team won 40 games in the regular season, which was only the second time in school history. Also won a SEC regular season championship, which was the first time. Which was the first time they'd won that since like the 1970s. I can't remember the exact year because I've had a few beers already today. So
that's the spirit.
It's about 42 years since 1977, I believe. So.
And I think it's important to note that this is our fifth regional to host in the last 6 years. So Ben's right. We've been going to the postseason very, very consistently. We just haven't gotten over that hump to Omaha.
Yeah,
the guys have to start. Players have to grab up their nuts and like start playing a little bit better. You know, and just really have to. You know, you got to. It's definitely nut check time when it gets to this level, and you know, that's just what you have to do to get to Omaha. It looks like.
Yeah, I'm curious as to what's changed between 08 and 09 Ole Miss teams. But first I'll give Seth, we'll go with our resident expert, Seth. You're welcome, Seth. We'll give you a chance now to tell Ole Miss fans a little bit about Missouri's recent history.
Well, and you know, I think that the biggest thing we can look to is about 7 years ago or so when our athletic director came to our head coach and said, this year you kind of need to make the NCAA tournament, or that's probably going to be it. And so since then, Tim Jamison has led Mizzou to 7 straight NCAA tournaments within the confines of the Big 12. That is second next to Texas. Shows kind of the consistency that we've had, although I think in certainly agreeing a bit with our Ole Miss guys, it is kind of been a nut grab time for Mizzou, just in so much as they've had a lot of talent. We have littered the past few amateur drafts with top pitching talent, but you haven't seen this team make it past the super regional and really typically not even make it past the regionals. I think for this year, a lot of onus was put on the pitching staff. Kyle Gibson has certainly come through in that respect. Not a lot of the other pitchers, unfortunately, have, and so that forced the team, especially with the offense being so terrible at the beginning of the season, to really kind of rework itself and turn themselves more into a clutch hitting team rather than a usually offensively productive team. But they came on towards the end of the year. Part of that was because our schedule was so unbalanced. We had such tough teams at the beginning of the year from the Big 12. We played a real nice out-of-conference schedule. It certainly worked to our advantage later on in the season as our RPI really was much higher than our record would have led you to believe. And we came on strong at the end of the year, faltered just a tad right at the end without winning the Big 12 tournament championship as that went to number one, by God, Texas Longhorns. But in the end, the number two ranking, getting to play Ole Miss, pretty much old hat at this point for us. Good for Ole Miss, though, from jumping from number three last year to number one this year. So I guess I will lead off with a quick question. First off, Ross, are you the only one not currently drinking on this podcast? Because I am drinking. We know that Bill's drinking. We know that our Ole Miss boys are drinking. So
legally speaking, I cannot answer that.
Well done. Well done. Number two, back to our Ole Miss guys. You know, certainly this is going to play a huge part. The news that Scott Biddle is not going to be available this week. Certainly everyone, a lot of people are well aware of the type of season he had last year, 130 strikeouts, really dominant performances. This year, we're not playing quite as much, a little bit more out of the reliever role for you guys, 5-2, only pitched 45 and two-thirds innings. So my question to you is, are people going to make too much of the fact that Biddle is not going to be able to pitch, or have you guys already kind of moved on from what you would have expected from him at the beginning of the year? And does this really put any kind of pressure on folks like Drew Pomeranz or anybody else?
Well, I think the most pressure placed on Drew Pomeranz right now is just him being able to stay away from the bars and women the night before he starts.
That's tough in Oxford, though.
Yeah, it is. It is. Now, he's got a funny reputation up at school. But jokes aside, you know, Scott Biddle is a tremendous pitcher. And you're right, not having him for the regional, he's not on the regional roster from what we can tell, is going to be difficult. But I will say the rest of our bullpen has stepped it up this year. Have they replaced Scott Biddle in his absence as of late? No, not at all. But we've got some guys that are emerging and playing some solid ball. We've got guys that can string together a few solid innings, but Biddle was the kind of guy that could string together just inning after inning after inning on such a consistent basis. We don't have that right now, but we got a few guys that can step up. Guys like Jake Morgan's an incredible closer, for example. He's kind of filled in that closer role as of late. But you know, it's tough. It's tough without Biddle, and it worries me.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir here about guys who can go an inning or maybe two. One of the more fun things that's happened this year with Missouri baseball is just that we have about two guys who can give us more than three innings at a time, and so. Our second best starter behind Kyle Gibson was Johnny Holstaff, where Tim Jamison just run rolls nine pitchers for an inning each. And somebody, we've been keeping up with the stats for the year, and Johnny Holstaff is something like 12-3 with a 3-something ERA. You look at the actual roster, and you see only two guys or three guys with an under 4 ERA on the year, a bunch of guys with 5, 6, 7, 8, but they can give us one good inning. And so it's been kind of a patchwork effort after Gibson. I was also going to mention, I guess this is for Mizzou guys more than anything, but along with the news of Biddle's absence, and as a Mizzou fan, I say thank God. Along with that, there's word that Tim Jamison might actually be starting Nick Tepish against Western Kentucky and trying to save Gibson for that second game against Mississippi. I love the move just because it's ballsy, but Seth or Ross, what do you think about the actual strategic value of such a move?
Well, Seth, I'll take it first. Whenever I heard the news, I kind of had thinking along the same lines. Again, it's a huge gamble, and I discussed it not in the roundtable because, of course, I had to miss that on Wednesday, but I discussed it in the comments of the roundtable with Kansas State perhaps doing the same thing in regard to, if you can, maybe gamble with A.J. Morris, save him for Rice. But honestly, I didn't expect Jamison to take the gamble. I don't know about you, Seth.
You know, I like the move. I think that our Ole Miss guys can certainly attest to this as well. And I want to point out some great work on some of the Mizzou websites by a longtime Mizzou poster, and I won't use his real name, but Mizzou Raz pointed out that it isn't so much the winner of the first game of the regional that automatically gets through. It's winning both of those games. And so while I think that certainly when Nick Tepish is on, he can certainly go out there and beat Western Kentucky. I think Western Kentucky is likely to give up a bunch of runs, and I think our offense can certainly pull us through. And holding Gibson for a game against Ole Miss, I'm certainly not to discount the Monmouth. Did you guys call them the Darkwing Ducks
yes.
At one point?
Yeah.
But not to discount their effort, but I think that Mizzou getting through 2-0 is far more to their benefit than 1-0, or at that point than 1-1. So I applaud the move. I think it is an unconventional move that, when you look at logic, isn't all that unconventional. If Tepish doesn't get the job done, you're putting Gibson in a situation where it's a must-win game and you've got your best pitcher out there. So either way, you're going to have your best pitcher in what is likely to be the biggest game of your season at that point.
Yeah, because, I mean, if Kyle Gibson beats Western Kentucky, that means Nick Tepish has to beat Ole Miss. And this way, I mean, Tepish has a better chance of beating Western Kentucky than Ole Miss, and you got to beat them both. So, all right, so this year, moving on to, I guess back to Ole Miss here, the Ole Miss offense a little bit. When I was looking at the numbers for my own little preview this morning, I was staggered by the fact that I look at a lot at OPS, on base plus slugging. Only one guy for Ole Miss has above a 1,000 OPS, but almost nobody has below a 900. It's just like the whole team is top to bottom strong. There's no single All-American player, I guess, unless there is. But it's just top to bottom strong. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah, I would say that. You have about 9 guys that are batting over 300 right now. And with, I think the only starter that's not batting over 300 right now is Kevin Moore, who's batting 295 at shortstop. So, really solid lineup from top to bottom. You got a few guys you can cycle in and out. They'll do Bianco definitely likes to play the matchups a little bit. So if there is a, he'll bring in a lefty to face a righty reliever, that sort of thing, and just kind of leave him there for the rest of the game, or maybe make a last minute change if he thinks the matchup is good. He likes to play the percentages, I guess, is the old adage. But that's definitely kind of how the Ole Miss offense works. Is it's not so much trying to pound the ball out like some of the other teams in the SEC, but just kind of stringing together a good bit of hits and just trying to knock the guys around and just kind of get on base as much as possible. That all starts with Jordan Henry leading off and trying to swipe a few bags and then having guys like Logan Power knock them in. I mean, I think Logan pretty much averages about 50 RBIs a year over the past 3 years. That's sort of how Ole Miss runs, I guess, is just trying to get around the bags as much as possible and just knocking around with singles and doubles and, not really hitting the long ball nearly as much.
Yeah,
I noticed. Really bad.
Go ahead, Bob.
We haven't really had a consistent long ball threat since about 2005, I think, when we had Stephen Head and Brian Petway on the team, two guys. Every time they came up to the plate, you knew that they had a chance to take it yard. But really, ever since then, that's a long time, really, when you think about college sports. We haven't had just a consistent home run threat from the beginning to the end of the season. So Bianco sort of defined himself with this small ball as of late.
So you think that's over the last few years, that's been kind of the Ole Miss identity, I guess, where I was thinking from the Missouri standpoint, we've had the identity of having good pitching and a couple good offensive players, but it's mostly been pitching first. So with you guys, it's more just relentless getting on base and moving around the bases.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, good defense has definitely tried to be a pinch-in of the teams as well. And then just being able to really bunt guys over and just kind of playing fundamental baseball more than just trying to be, I guess, more like a gorilla ball kind of team where you're trying to hit a lot of balls out, but just using speed and defense to really to kind of get the other teams off balance and then capitalize on any mistakes or errors they make.
Well, okay, so back to on the Missouri side on offense, it's kind of funny looking at the stats, and there was an article in one of the local papers here, I think the Columbia Missourian, this morning about how all the Mizzou players are pretty much saying now, stats are stupid, stats don't matter, it's all about timely hitting and everything, and I sort of agree with that, but I'm also a stat nerd, and I love the stats. This team right now, the offense was so terrible over the first half of the season. I mean, we started, 1-8, something like that, and just really, it took about a month to claw back to .500, and as of late, they've been a really, really tough out. But then you look at, Trevor Coleman trying to come back from injury, but before injury, he was only hitting .250. Steve Gray, the first baseman, who I thought was going to be outstanding this year, ended up batting .249 with 4 homers. You've got guys who have come through in clutch situations late in the season here, like Austin Holt, but he's only batting .241 for the season. To the Mizzou guys again, we've seen clutch hitting here and there, but how much confidence do you have in the offense heading into, they've been better over the last month, but have they been good enough to win this regional?
Ross, I'll go ahead and start this one off. My answer is I don't honestly have a ton of offense. I mean, right now I'm looking down the Ole Miss lineup, and I'm really impressed by the fact that, you know, your leadoff hitter has walked 50 times and stolen 34 bags. We don't really have that kind of presence, never mind the fact he's hitting 347. We don't really have that kind of presence to get the ball rolling in our lineup. You know, to make the analogy over to softball, our softball team's got Rhea Taylor, who hits over 400 in the stolen 30 bases this year. We don't have somebody like that who's a table setter. And so, yes, while Greg Folgia has come on and has probably led our team in most offensive categories, you know, and while there are a lot of guys on this team who can get the clutch hit, you know, you mentioned Coleman and Gray and those kind of folks, and Lawless, you know, those kind of guys can get the clutch hit. We haven't really seen it all that often this year. And so it really has been, to some extent, a little bit of just the smoke and mirrors. And for a lot of the season, when the hitting was on, the pitching wasn't, and vice versa. And that's why you see a team that, yes, you know, is back in a regional, but the record doesn't necessarily show the whole story, and that we are kind of near 500 because we've won and lost some really strange games so far this season.
Well, Ross lost his connection, as he always does, so I'm going to step up until he until he pops back online here. Yeah, I think this has just been such a weird season. As far as the losing streaks and just not being able to count on certain guys. And, you know, Greg Folgia ended up having great stats for the year, 330 average, somehow a 599 slugging percentage. Seth, was he anywhere close to this before this season? It shocked me that he was doing this well throughout the season.
Shades of it, yes. You know, I think it's one of those where you kind of are surprised. You know, it's one of those games where, you know, I go to a basketball game, you look up at the end of the night, you know, you couldn't remark about a player being on the floor and they scored 14 points.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole – it's been funny counting on him, but all right, Ross is back here, so I'm going to very slyly add him back in. I don't do anything slyly.
Well, here, while you're
adding him
back in, guys – you know, I'm looking up and down your lineup. If you are to tell us what you feel is your biggest positive coming into this, what you feel is going the best for you, and then the thing that you are most afraid of that could potentially lead to Ole Miss bowing out in their old region, in their own regional, what are those big keys for you right now?
Keep talking. I'm struggling.
Jordan Henry, first and foremost. I mean, As you said, he's stolen 34 bases, I believe. He leads the SEC in stolen bags, and you know, you walk Jordan Henry and it turns into a double. I mean, he is a monster at moving around the bases, and I think he's definitely been all season long the best thing we got going for us. And I guess, Ben, I'll leave you to be the bearer of bad news. Is what you think the worst thing going for us is?
Yeah, I appreciate that, Bob. You're great.
I know.
The worst thing would be, you know, obviously a disappointing performance in the SEC tournament, and just kind of going down the stretch. It was Ole Miss swept Arkansas to end the regular season, but the weekend before that, lost 2 out of 3 to our rival Mississippi State. So there has been some inconsistencies of late, where the team hasn't really been able to, you know, kind of pull together the wins and really gut out some of the tougher wins, especially in the SEC tournament, going 0-2. And getting run ruled by Florida, who obviously, you know, is a great team, but at the same time, it's the SEC tournament, you know, and you're playing for a possible national seed. You don't need to be getting beat by 10 runs at this point in the season. So maybe they're having some confidence issues at this point without Scott Biddle. They know Scott Biddle's not going to be there. There's been some rumors that he might be in the bullpen for the Super Regional if they get to that level, but. Really, right now, they're going to be looking at guys with, you know, some leadership and have some regional experience. But for the most part, going with a guy like Drew Pomeranz, who the only experience he had in a regional was against Bethune-Cookman, who I'm pretty sure, I don't know the mascot, I don't know where the school is, to be honest with you. And I mean, he did great against them, but Brett Buckvich is really kind of a 5-year senior who's just kind of up and down. You never know what you're going to get out of him. And Phillip Irwin's really the best pitcher that we have right now. So definitely some inconsistencies for the team right now. And going into a regional, going 0-2 in the SEC tournament, it's really kind of something where you're really kind of trying to grasp it, getting your confidence back up and play like the team you know you can.
And I think this might have been covered earlier, but has it been made official who's starting which day for Ole Miss?
Pomeranz is going to be pitching on Friday, okay. Which I know that it sounds like, I mean, he's been the number one Friday pitcher throughout the year. But if you look over his last three outings, I think over his last 16 and a third innings, he's given up 13 runs. So his ERA is about, what, 7.3-ish, I don't know, something like that, over the last 16 innings. So really the more consistent pitcher right now is Philip Irwin. So really they're kind of, even though they're kind of doing a Mizzou strategy, I guess, as far as that goes, because they're not going with the most consistent best guy right now. They're trying to go with a guy that needs to build his confidence back up again and maybe get ready for a super regional next weekend.
Yeah, I think
if that makes any sense at all.
I think it does. I think really as far as Mizzou's concerned, as far as starting the number two the first day and number one the second, honestly, look at last year's regional. Aaron Crow destroys. I mean, that was kind of Aaron Crow's shining moment in a Mizzou uniform, was shutting out Ole Miss to start off the regional, but then everybody else has to come through the rest of the weekend and they can't get it done. So I do think maybe that played into the decision. And with Irwin and Pomeranz, looking at Irwin's numbers, it seems like he's not as much of a strikeout pitcher, but with good defense behind him, he doesn't have to be. You just keep the ball down and don't give up many home runs, which he doesn't do. So I don't know which one of those I would fear more as a Missouri fan, just because Missouri's been so streaky. You know, they could hit a good pitcher, or they could get shut down by a bad one. It's hard to tell. But, all right, well, I'm going to, just so Ross doesn't feel left out. Whoa, wait, hold on. Oh, Ross just said finish without me. So there we go. Problem solved.
Well, here, let me go ahead and get these guys out of here on this last question here.
Good.
Talk to us about, first off, the kind of atmosphere you guys are expecting in Oxford. I mean, I assume that classes are out at this point, so are you expecting a big crowd? And really, will the pregame crowd be anything like it is down in the Grove for football season? And I was able to experience the beauty of Ole Miss football a couple of years ago when we had the pleasure of coming down there. The best tailgating I will ever see in my lifetime.
Well, I'll say, first of all, thank you for the compliments. But you know, I believe it was our Super Regional against Texas in 2005 that for that year was the most highly attended Super Regional. Ben, do you know exactly if that's correct or not?
Give or take. I think Mississippi State's had a few where they've had like over 40,000 attend over a weekend. Cool. But I think that weekend we had where we were pushing like 37,000, 38,000.
Uh-huh. Wow. I mean, we fill the seats, and you know, they just added on to Swayze Field. The stadium capacity was a few thousand, but you would fit 11,000-12,000 people in the stadium because they'd sit on the hills and the terraces kind of in left and right field. But now they've kind of extended the grandstands and everything to where and they've added skyboxes, so it actually literally holds 10,000 in the stadium, and then around the stadium, you got people setting up there. So it's going to be packed. It's going to be loud. Regionals are always a lot of fun, but Ole Miss baseball fans are they're good fans, and they're actually, I think they're pretty easy to get along with if you're an opposing fan. So there's nothing to worry about there. But will it be the same as the Grove? You know, I guess on a much much smaller scale, and people aren't dressed up for a baseball game as they would be in the Grove.
But I appreciated them getting dressed up like they did for the football.
By them, you mean the co-eds?
Yes, them specifically.
Okay.
Yeah, if it were up to Seth, we'd play at Mississippi, not even just home and home, just at Mississippi every single
year. Every year.
Maybe a home and home with Memphis thrown in there, too. That'd be a good time. Yeah. All right, well, good luck to you guys. Obviously, we hope you finish second in the regional, and I'm sure you do the same.
Yep.
But it was good talking to you. It's good to get a nice little preview here of what's going on now. Both teams just need to win their Friday game, so we have a fun Saturday game to look forward to. So, once again, this was Bob and Ben from Red Cup Rebellion. I was happy not to accidentally say Red Solo Cup there. Red Cup Rebellion.
I believe that's Redacted Cup.
Yeah, that's right. Redacted Cup. So it's been good having you. Good luck this weekend, and if we ever play in football or baseball or hell, basketball again, we'll give you another call.
Excellent. Thank you. We enjoyed it.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Ross, do you still hate MediaCom?
Do I still hate meeting? Is there a term greater than hate, perhaps? all I know is if only I had Charter high-speed internet in my area.
Well done. Oh, well done.
Nice. I didn't even see that one coming. I would like to say just we've had MediaCom come out twice in the last week, and I've had two awesome service guys, and so far nothing's gone down, knocking on wood as I speak. So,
if you guys lived in St. Louis, you could use the 60 meg high-speed internet that we now have.
I still don't understand that. Does it literally anticipate what you're clicking?
Oh, it knows. It puts the entire interwebs. It downloads it to your computer as soon as you actually log on.
Oh,
so it's just there in your cache.
Sorry, man. South Columbia, there's a market for that.
All right. So to wrap up this podcast here, although technically if we're talking 40 minutes, we have another 14 minutes to go. I know everybody's excited about that. So, all right. So we got Western Kentucky Friday afternoon. Nick Teppish is going. I'll say this right out. Nick Teppish walks a lot of guys, and Western Kentucky will take advantage of every single non-strike you throw. And so that matchup has me a little concerned right here, but I think it just, at some point, if Missouri's going to make it to the Super Regional, Teppish is going to have to pitch well no matter who it's against. So, and again, all the credit in the world to Tim Jamison for being pretty ballsy on this one and risking some flack if this doesn't go well. So, all right, moving on to softball, since the women played in their first Women's College World Series game today in 15 years. Didn't go so well.
No, not what we would have liked.
After the first inning, it was pretty much even. It was just, you know, Arizona, in that very first inning, Arizona State just had we know what we're doing here. We won the national title last year. We freaking know that the Oklahoma City dirt is hard as a rock and just slap everything on the ground. And they came out, got loaded the bases in the first inning with no outs, put up three runs, loaded the bases in the second inning with no outs, put up three more runs. Missouri tried to make it interesting there in the sixth inning, I believe, loading the bases with, either zero or one outs themselves, down 7-1, scored a run there, scored again in the seventh, but alas, it was 7-3. They played Georgia on Saturday in the loser's bracket. Who do you think goes on the mound on Saturday?
That's tough. I mean, I didn't, unfortunately, just because of some actual work issues, I didn't get to watch the game as I had hoped. But you're talking about, you know, Arizona State slamming the ball down on the ground. That actually, to me, sounds like Chelsea Thomas was actually on a bit. Because if Chelsea Thomas is on, you're never going to get the ball in the air. Because the drop ball, she throws so hard, you're never going to have time to get under it. Now, yes, if the balls are getting through the infield, or if the infield isn't backing her up quite right, then sure, we are not a world class team at that point. With Delaney, with each of them having thrown even innings, I know that Coach Earlywine had talked about the reason why he went with Delaney in the deciding game against UCLA was that he had put a lot of innings, a lot of pitches on the arm of Thomas. I would say I would expect Thomas out there, but Nodelman wouldn't surprise me either. Nor would Delaney. I mean, I think that, you know, with Thomas, if she's up to it, you have to look to her. With Delaney, she's been a little bit injury prone, and she herself would tell you that. So you don't necessarily count on her. And with Nodelman, maybe you just kind of try to, you know, completely change the look and change the angle, which a lot of the articles, as we've talked about, how Coach Earlywine likes to do that, change the looks, change the angles. Georgia is a team that's going to fight until the very end, and it took a very good effort today from Daniel Laurie and UW to take them down and finally finish them off. So this is a tough, tough game for Mizzou to win, especially, you know, for a team that may be a little bit down on themselves just because they didn't come out like they would have expected.
Yeah, it was so frustrating watching those first couple innings because, I mean, as Earlywine said it's himself when they interviewed him, I think in either the third or the fourth inning, you know, Arizona State hit two balls hard, but every single time they just squibbed it. They either hit it straight on the ground, and by the time it landed, the person was on first base already, or they just found the narrowest of gaps between first and second or between short and third. And, it was just one of those games. Like, they an inch to the left or right, maybe things turn out a little different. But at this point, I mean, you have to get over it as quickly as possible. A day off tomorrow helps. And, I mean, I think it's the same thing as with what I said about Nick Tepish, if Mizzou's going to make some noise in the Women's College World Series, it's probably going to be with Chelsea Thomas pitching well. And might as well put her back out there, I think, as soon as possible. Especially since, I think she knows now what to expect as far as the ground and everything else. I think they won't be caught off guard by that.
Well, let's be honest here. I mean, this was a field that we just won a Big 12 tournament title on. So, I mean, I think that we're discrediting Arizona State just a little bit. We've played more on this field than most teams. I mean, we've played more on this field this year than anybody in this tournament, and certainly have played on it just as much as anyone. So, you know, credit to them for getting through. I don't think this was at all a case of us not knowing what to expect from those surroundings there.
Well, and I mean, Go ahead, Bill.
I was just going to say, you know, my viewing of the game was limited. I was able to catch a couple innings here in the Futures Lab. And I just, from what I said, you have to give some credit to Arizona. I tried to touch on that. I mean, regardless of who you throw out there, and I was having discussion/argument with one of my colleagues who said he would have started Delaney instead of Thomas. I think they were right to go with Thomas. And at the same time, I don't think, despite how ugly the numbers were, you can completely put that on her. Especially, like you said, it seemed, although Missouri is not going to be the cleanest fielding team, as we've seen, they are like prone to a couple of bad fielding games. But I think credit has to be given where credit is due, and Arizona State managed to at least put the ball in play to give themselves a shot. It happened to work well today.
Well, and absolutely.
We looked dominant against Oklahoma and winning the Big 12 title because the fielding behind Thomas was so strong, and there wasn't a recorded out in the air in that game. So when our defense is on and her pitches are working, we can and have played with everyone out there. But, you know, if those balls are finding little holes and we are booting a chance or two to end an inning, then, yes, we are going to look how we look today in those first few innings.
Well, and
it's just a gut punch whenever you see just a fly ball just bounce right off of Mario Schweisberger's glove in right field.
Yeah, and in my defense, 2 weeks ago when they were in Oklahoma City, it had been raining for about the last 2 weeks straight, and it hasn't rained in 2 weeks since. So it is possible that it is a little harder now. But that aside, yes, Arizona State looked like the defending World Series champions out there. And especially when they were in the field, they looked very confident and very much better than we did. I will say that I will be watching the next game on mute. I was losing patience very quickly with the Mizzou's out of their element talk. It was fun making Dick Lebowski jokes in the live thread, but let's try not to be quite as condescending next time there, Mrs. Color Commentator, whoever you may be.
That would be Michelle Smith.
There you go. Michelle Smith, try to be a little less condescending next time you're talking. All right, so they play Georgia on Saturday. I'm not sure what happens after that, but, I mean, hopefully they can just, you know, anything now is icing as compared to what's happened the rest of the season. It was absolutely great beating UCLA. It was a big moment for the program. It's a young team looking to get back there next year. So, I mean, anything's icing, but it would be really, really nice to pull out a win, get a third game in there, get Delaney some playing time in that third game if need be. But we'll see what happens. I very much commend Aaron Earlywine for doing what he's done this year with a pretty damn young team overall. So what else do we have to talk about? Anything?
I can throw a quick all sports report together just simply because there is one other sport that's still in action.
Okay.
This weekend, the Mizzou Tiger outdoor track team will travel to Louisville. 23 Tigers will travel down there for what is kind of a strange meet and a meet that may not be continued after this year. It is an NCAA regional meet. I don't really know why they have it, considering that those who make the NCAA do so on achieved times throughout the year. So what a regional meet has to do with sending people to the NCAA championships in a couple of weeks, I don't really know. But 23 Tigers will go down there, 9 women, including Krishna Lee and Alicia Hunt in the hammer throw and shot put. Lee will also compete in the discus. Shannon Leinart has run very well this past year in the 800, both she and Lee winning individual championships at the Big 12 championships, as well as Chris Rohr, obviously, who has been extremely dominant in the hammer throw, will also compete in the discus. 14 men in total, including 3 in the 800 meters, as well as Tim Cornell and Brian Grable in the 1500. We also have Brian Hancock in the pole vault, with Nick Adcock in the 110 meter hurdles, some of you may remember, Adcock had been very successful in the decathlon in years past, but seemed to kind of take off of it this year a bit. So it'll be interesting to see if the junior returns to it next year in his final season. But 23 will compete. I don't know quite how many will or already have qualified to go on to the NCAAs, which, as I said, will be in a couple of weeks at the University of Arkansas, but still some action on the Mizzou all-sports front. And I suppose that is your all-sports report.
Hey, hey. This whole thing has been one. This has been one giant.
Soccer released their schedule. They are playing a ridiculously tough national caliber schedule, so I say good for them. A lot of talent returning to that team that won Mizzou's first Big 12 championship of the season. But you're looking at teams like Northwestern and UCLA, Long Beach State, DePaul, some teams from the SEC, Vanderbilt, Alabama, or excuse me, and Auburn. So a lot of talented teams will be coming through Walton Stadium. So hopefully enough to get some fans excited early, get out there to see what will finally be a somewhat senior-laden team. It's been a couple of years since we've really had a lot of seniors, but this will certainly be one of those seasons. So good for them for putting a lot of competition on the field as they get ready for the Big 12 season.
Yeah, Brian Blitz, speaking of coaches who just pulled themselves off the mat and saved their careers in a major, major way over the last couple seasons, Mike Alden's patience paying off greatly with the Mizzou coaching staffs as a whole. One last quick programming note. One more week to go. Hopefully we have a super regional to cover in baseball next weekend. And I don't have to worry about that being a jinx because I said the same thing in an email about the Women's College World Series and look what happened. After next week, we will begin the long, arduous week-by-week, opponent-by-opponent preview of the 2009 football season. So you've got a lot of fun posts to read, both funny and nerdish and everything in between. So be on the lookout for that. Any final words other than go Tigers tomorrow against Western Kentucky?
I'm out of beer.
Well, you better go fix that. I'm out of my my red Solo cup is empty. I was not going to reveal what was in it, but we had to make do with what was in the house, and I thought of this late. So I actually had a Grape Crush plus Slow Gin mix.
Oh, God.
As my wife called it, a slow crush. Yes, yes, yes.
Oh.
It was actually, yeah. I'm not going to lie, it's good. Especially with more and more slow gin involved.
You know what? I'm not going to lie. I'm judging right now.
Don't judge.
We don't expect anything less from you, Mr. Bob Bummer.
Exactly, Bummer. All right. We're a little under 40 minutes, but we're not gonna stall just to fill another couple minutes.
No, I imagine right at this point we are about to stall just to get to the 40 minutes.
Oh, actually, I was going to also, my last thing, share that I did just get a Skype message from Ben from Red Cup Rebellion saying simply, hottie toddy.
Gosh almighty.
All right. Well, we'll wrap this up and get it posted. Go Tigers tomorrow against Western Kentucky. Anyone? That's it?
No, you summed it up. You're fine.
Okay. Awesome. Bye, guys.